Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio.
I'm Jason Rosenbaum in for Elaine Cha. So far this year, 83 people have been murdered in the city of St. Louis. Only 5 years ago, that number was over 200. That spike in homicides, a trend seen nationwide during the pandemic, has come down. During that historic spike in violence, a team of filmmakers and local activists were working to document the reality of violence on the young people of St. Louis. The result is the film Catching Bullets. Ahead of a special screening this week and the film's release on streaming, St. Louis Public Radio afternoon newscaster Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson sat down with the film's creators to talk about St. Louis and its cycle of gun violence. Here's Marissa Ann.
The new documentary Catching Bullets follows the life of anti-violence activist Darren Seals as he works to transform a community he once treated as a territory for drug sales and violence. St. Louis's Walnut Park neighborhood was considered one of the deadliest neighborhoods in the city before Seals bought a condemned church and converted it into a youth center to curb gun violence and show youth a new path. The film is set to hit streaming services on Friday. And joining me in studio to talk about that effort and the film are Darren Seals, an anti-violence activist and the central subject in the film. Darren, welcome.
Oh, how you doing?
Pretty good. We have Derek Phillips, the film's producer, filmmaker, and a St. Louis activist. Derek, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And Catching Bullets director Ben Shawley. Ben, welcome.
Thanks.
Darren, first, I want to clarify for our audience that you are not connected to another notable activist here in St. Louis named Darren Seals, just to clear up any confusion. So this documentary, Catching Bullets, focuses a great deal on you and your work to turn a vacant church into a unity center. You bought this church in 2018. What brought you to this project, and why that church?
Well, church had a lot of history behind it. Rose Hill Missionary Baptist Church. I grew up in the church, playing the drums, singing in the choir. We got a history in there, 40 years. And when they condemned, the back wall fell. No one cared for it. So at that time, I was walking away from the street life, the violence, and trying to get something done different with my life. And I had turned around and said, I want to do something different. So it was wintertime when I was mentoring the moms who's of my friends that lost their lives. So what I wanted to do is have a safe haven where they can just come. It was wintertime. So then a young man got killed right up the street. It drew me right there to the front porch. And from that day, I said, you know what? Let me see. Get interested in trying to buy it.
All from a young man passing away up the street and seeing that. That kind of really took that idea to the next level. This film opens with you and a group of people rolling a casket down Natural Bridge in Goodfellow in the middle of the night, calling for an end to gun violence. And before y'all could even get settled, we hear gunfire and then someone was hit. Can you walk me through what that moment was like for you, what you were thinking, especially since you're kind of in essence, caught in the crossfire?
Well, we didn't rehearse anything. What we wanted to do is get out and show folks. We could have did it in the afternoon, right, Ben? But we decided who'd be out in the evening time and nighttime? All the guys from the streets. So it was about 11 o'clock, and the streets was quiet. We come out with the loud music, and we were just trying to get attention on the casket to let people know, hey, you don't get it together, this is the route you're going to take. So we was on the middle of Goodfellow Natural Bridge. A guy walked up to a car, and the guy shot out the window. And I don't know if it, like, hit his button or...
Yeah, I think he said it grazed him.
Yeah, it grazed him on his button of his shirt. And what I was thinking at that moment, oh, man, this is going to be the end of me. We marching, got these guys out here. Nobody signed no kind of papers, signed. They write to anything away. So I was like, man. And so that was the moment to say, you know what? I'm going full speed.
I have to go back here. Were you scared? Like, I mean, this is not easy work, but were you scared at all?
No, ma'am. I mean, you got to understand, I've been shot 13 times. So, I mean, it's the norm for me. So it's just like 4th of July through my head every night. So when I hear gunshots, it's just like that's every day in my neighborhood. So I'm used to it.
Yeah, but you weren't prepared for that moment. That's a you're in a different life now.
Well, I'm in a different life, but you got to understand trauma. Mm. I don't think it's a pill or certain matters can get rid of it. So when it's in you, it's in you. You know, if I walk out today and something happened to me today, I did what I was supposed to do. So at that moment at the time, I think that me and Ben, we was doing something right. So that's the best way to go out. If I got to go out, I'm doing something right instead of being in a gangway serving somebody's, you know.
Wow. So, Derek, there is a lot of gunfire in this documentary. How did you approach these scenes, and were you prepared for that?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, growing up in the 5100 block of Kensington, we grew up around a lot of violence. It was 6 brothers, 5 of us had either been shot or stabbed. And so you get used to it, and you just, you know, you prepare yourself to walk away from any day of if something happened. You sort of prepare for it. And I say, by and large, a lot of St. Louisans are like that, very tough-minded, you know.
And there's much more that I want to talk about, you know, in regards to retaliation. But, you know, there's a lot of youth here, and they talk about fighting that kind of inner demon, so to speak, about not seeking vengeance. And I'm curious, what led you down a different path that did not involve violence?
Well, when I was 16, going on 17, I was stabbed, and I left the neighborhood because I saw older guys out on the street. You know, I was protecting my younger brother, mm-hmm. and the older guys just sat and watched. And I just thought I left the neighborhood, and I went to start playing basketball at Forest Park College with some older guys, and I went back to school and everything. So that was kind of an epiphany moment for me.
Other guys sat and watched that. Yeah. And did not step in.
Older guys were there. It like happened in slow motion. You see a guy walking down the street. After we separated to fight, my brother, he was still out of control. And then you see the guy was walking. And he had his hand on his side. And he's just walking. And it's like it was happening in slow motion. People were just walking, watching him walk towards our house. And nobody intervened. And I just, something about that, you know, just didn't sit well with me. So I left the neighborhood at that point. And, you know, the guys I grew up with, it was a little different then. You know, we built things, bikes and go-karts and things like that. It was still violence, but it was different then. Mm. Yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear that. Ben, why did you choose this particular moment to begin this film? I mean, it's a very powerful moment.
So in the summer of 2019, I'm sure a lot of listeners will remember that we had a significant number of kids killed in the St. Louis area. And not that violence wasn't on the rise leading into that, but I felt like that was a moment where a lot of people really sort of like took notice. I think that was a moment that mobilized a lot of people. And it also, I think sort of the desperation that we were feeling at that time went hand in hand with some new initiatives launching that were aimed at reducing violence in St. Louis. And so I was moved by the killings, and I was always also really interested to see what was going to happen during 2020. So at the end of 2019, I was actually had a course release coming up. So I had like a teaching load reduction at Lindenwood where I work, where I knew that I was going to have a little bit of extra time to work on a documentary project. And as 2019 ended, I realized that was really the story that I thought was important to tell. So at the end of 2019, I just started looking around. I actually got a little bit of footage on New Year's Eve 2019 at Tandy Community Center, where there was a lock-in going on just to keep kids off the streets when there were, you know, like stray bullets going off. And I left that lock-in and I went home and I set up a camera on my front porch in Tower Grove South or Tower Grove East. And I just recorded the sound of midnight on New Year's and got some footage of the street at that point. And as I was listening to just all of the pops in the distance, I realized that this was going to be the film. This was going to be the story that I wanted to get involved in. And that's when I sought out Derek, who had been one of my students at Lindenwood. And he and I got together and talked about ways to approach the story. And I knew that, actually, I didn't know going into it that he had personal experience with violence. But that really struck me immediately that that was so close already. And that was something that, that I knew he would have insight into, so he'd be a good partner. Mm.
There is a level of vulnerability in this film that is heartbreaking, raw, incredibly difficult to watch, but necessary to watch. And there's a moment early on in the film, Darren, you're talking to a group of young boys at Sankofa, and they look like they're still in middle school, and sometimes a tad bit younger than that, maybe even high school. And you ask one of them about their father who was shot and killed.
You ever been to your dad's grave?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. Is he in jail, the guy that did it, he in jail?
My mom, like, get mad at me sometimes because, like, I be telling her that I want to look for that person. And I said I want to do the same to him. And she told me to stop saying it, but I say the same thing.
I mean, that's kind of normal. Now you done went deep with it. So let that guy work with him. Man can only do what man do. That's out your power, okay? But I know you hurt.
That was a scene from the documentary Catching Bullets. Darren, right before this scene, you're working with these kids on rehabbing the church, showing them how to measure, how to use drills and drywall. But then you're also asking them about how they're grieving and if they're thinking about revenge. Help us understand what you were trying to do in that moment.
Well, first, you got to go to their level. Every kid that come to me, I don't have the kids. I wanted to get all the shooters. That's the problem. That's my specialty. So just like you want to pick up a gun, they're picking up the gun because of the noise, the sound that it make. So I'd be wanting them to know you can pick up a jackhammer and get the same noise. But instead of us putting money while you're going to jail, you can make money with it. So every time, that's my way of opening up a door to them so they can trust me. So once they open up the door and walk in, then I can ask them anything I want, more like, okay, what's going on? What's your state of being? You know, because violence don't have a color or a timeline. It can happen any minute. So you dealing with trauma. Every kid that come through there got something wrong with them because their moms dropped them off. So at that moment, it was like, how do I get him to understand that it's going to be okay, knowing that it's not, because I haven't lost a father. You know, it's like an alcoholic. I can tell you to stop drinking, but would you listen to me and I told you I don't drink? So they know what I've been through, and I try to guide them through this maze. So it's more like that deep trauma. And it can be in the middle of putting up a wall. We'll stop and have that conversation at that moment, at that time.
There was something so sweet in that scene. There was another kid there, and he was like, just let it out. Don't stop. Just let it out. And so you're already building up that rapport and that encouragement, that dynamic within, where it's like, you don't have to be ashamed to talk about these things. It is okay. It's safe. It's normal.
Right. But, you know, in my community, it's, shh, don't talk about that. Or I ain't no chump, you know, don't talk. I'm supposed to raise my head up. I'm not with it. So it's like a badge of honor that they carry. So you have to break through a lot of barriers just to get them to open up. See, that little boy, Prince been around me for 3-4 years, and I never knew his problem. He would just always be real quiet and mad. So at that time, then it was like at the moment spur, and he got to talking about it. We didn't rehearse none of it. We don't rehearse nothing. We just raw conversation, and that's what it is.
And it felt authentic in that moment for sure. Derek, what was it like for you to capture that moment with your own experience growing up, you know, relating to what you already have shared with us?
Yeah, I still think about Prince because I was just talking about him and Ben, we were just talking about Prince. And we're saying that, you know, he still need to be reached. Somebody still needs, because he might remember what Duran said to him about that God handled it. He might remember that. And hopefully he do. And because my youngest brother was killed. And he was killed during the crack epidemic. And then it became assault weapons. And so that was been like the last 40 years. That's what we've dealt with in America. And hopefully we're on the other side of that, where we can get back to life how it was before in ways of love and teaching the youngsters that their character is more important than their cars and clothes.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Ben, capturing that particular moment?
So there were a lot of times when we were at the church filming, when you really, like, we would show up and we wouldn't know what was going to happen that day. We would just roll in, and a lot of times it was to work on something else. So one of the things that we were doing videos for Darren's social media feeds and things for him to introduce, like a drive-in movie night, and just videos that could be useful to him. But then while we were there, you know, we would set up and we would see, oh, there's these kids working. Let's get some footage of what they're doing. So I think those moments were always disarming because they were unexpected. And there were other ones too where, as it happened, you know, you'd sort of freeze and think, oh, I think, like, this is really affecting me deeply, and this is something that might end up being, you know, being part of a film. And I think it was as we captured those different moments, we started to think about how this could take shape as a feature documentary.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about the documentary film Catching Bullets. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrott Corporation, a contractor with over four decades of shaping the St. Louis landscape. More at Parrott.com.
Welcome back. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, in for Elaine Cha. Let's return to our conversation with the creators of the documentary film Catching Bullets, which chronicles several years of efforts by local activists to reduce gun violence. Earlier this week, St. Louis Public Radio's Marissa Ann Lewis Thompson sat down with the film's director, Ben Sholley, producer Derek Phillips, and anti-violence activist Darren Seals. Seals is a former drug dealer from Walnut Park, who in 2018 founded the Sankofa Unity Center in the same neighborhood. The film follows him as he works with different young people who are caught in a cycle of violence. Here's Marissa Ann Lewis Thompson continuing her conversation with Ben Sholley and Darren Seals.
So many of these kids and adults in the program have felt the physical, but also the mental effects of gun violence. Darren, how have you been able to get across to these kids that there are lifelong consequences to gun violence?
Well, first, I don't sugarcoat. It's not like, well, you know, things are going to be okay. Let me pray for you. You know, it wasn't like that. It's in Sankofa, LeBron, get your life together. You're going to, you know, see something different. 30 years to the penitentiary, and it just so happened, like, before this was shooting, I didn't know it was going to be a movie. I just wanted a Facebook video and showing, you know, to get it out there. And then we touched on different points. And then Ben just started putting it together. And Derek was like, we do this. And I let them do work the magic, because I never one time say, Ben, I'm videotaping. And it was no script. It was always me talking raw to them.
I also want to zero in, Darren, on the scene with Christian. He is at the center. He's scrolling through his phone. He's looking at pictures of his cousin who is murdered. And he's talking to another mentor, one of your colleagues. And Christian says that his cousin was killed over an argument about grass clippings.
So basically, your cousin was killed for a senseless manner, right?
Yes, sir.
So when that happened, how did that make you feel?
When that happened, it made me, like, I'm gonna keep it a buck. When that happened, I went over there the same day. I was gonna burn down his house, me and my cousin, my little girl cousin. We was thinking about it. Until I told her, nah, we ain't even gonna do that. We just gonna catch the dudes that did it, cause they still out here.
So they didn't get locked up?
No, they ain't get locked up. They got Brown Gun for questioning, but they ain't get locked up. It's the case still pending.
It's under investigation.
Mm-hmm. When we went to the funeral, it was a truck that looked just like it, parked in the same spot, everything. Everybody had a gun, even me. I was gonna shoot at that truck until we saw an old man in it. Then we was like, no, chill out.
And that was another scene from the documentary Catching Bullets. The older man's voice belonged to L. He's a mentor at the youth violence prevention organization Sankofa, and he was talking to a mentee named Christian. There is so much in that exchange. It's the cycle of violence. It's a hurt person hurting and wanting to hurt another person and nearly almost hurt an innocent person. Darren, what is happening in that cycle that you want people to understand?
That you want to open up. You know, it's more like when you go to church, you want to talk to the preacher, but do the preacher really understand what you're going through? So they can't go open up to their friends, because mostly their friends, if you look at him, he was doing a lot of movement and he was basically afraid to open up. So when he opened up, he poured it out. So now when you finally see, that hurt him.
And he was crying.
So that's a part that people don't, in our neighborhood, you know, all the shootings I've been through, I watched my childhood girlfriend get killed when I was, 10? Mm. Nobody came to me and said,
10.
Yeah, nobody came to me and said, it's going to be okay. In our neighborhoods, we don't get the counselors come down, mm-hmm. or when you go to school, you got to live with it. So it'll be part of the norm.
I just kept looking at them and I'm like, they're babies.
Yeah.
They're babies. They're so little.
Right. But that's only on the outside. But when you got trauma,
you're an adult.
You're a beast on the inside. And then you're looking at an automatic assault rifle. So who could stop you?
I think one thing that I realized early on in the process is that there are certain gaps. I think there are generational gaps that Darren and some of the other mentors worked really hard to bridge. And there also were some credibility gaps. And what I mean by that is there are a lot of people working really hard who have the certification and the training to provide really good counseling. But those are not always the people who have credibility with the young people they're trying to reach. And so I think that was one very interesting thing, is that Darren and a lot of the other mentors brought that credibility. And so a lot of what you see in the film is very impromptu, you know, discussions. It's not really counseling. It's not really therapy in any sort of clinical sense. But at the same time, they're in a position where they can then direct those young people to the resources that are available. And I'll let Darren talk about that and his work with Life Outside of Violence, because that's a lot of what he's doing now.
Well, tell us more about that.
Life Outside of Violence, a hospital base. I work with the HEAL team. And so what we do, whenever someone gets shot, we get called to the table, and we got 45 minutes to redirect them in a different view, just give them a different lens. It's like they can look through a camera. Now, let's turn the camera around on you and see where your life's going to be. What do you see yourself in the next 5 years? Right now, you're in pain, but let me show you what I did to get away from this. It's a way out. So we show them a way out. So all while, every time I mentor, I always bring up the fact, hopelessness is right here at this moment. You feel that nobody's care. You feel violated. This guy done shot me. I'm angry. So after 45 minutes, where do you see yourself? Like a little guy got shot, and I was telling him, what's next for you? Oh, man, I'm going back to the block. Then you just say your girlfriend pregnant. So now you're going to be dead and gone. Somebody going to do the same thing to him. Tears come down. So you got to show the kids the reality part about it. We hate to have them conversations, but we got to have them.
Last month, the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department pointed to the city's homicide rate as a sign of real improvement. It's down 22% in the first half of 2025. These numbers haven't been seen in nearly a decade. Darren, what are you seeing on the ground level? Are things better than they were before this movie was made?
Yes, I saw it. The shooting was probably still going, but the crime, you know, shootings, I mean, I always tell people, St. Louis ain't gonna stop crime. Crime been around way before I even was born, you was born. Ben, it's here. Crime was in the biblical days, Cain and Abel, it's here. So now, long as we're addressing it and talking about it, I guess some folks doing some great work. I watch Show Me Peace, them guys doing some good work. James Clark doing some good work. So the thing is, wait until we all sit at the table. Now we got a bigger program. And then we got to show these little kids it's a better way. Prop Joe teaching the kids how to do roofing. So many people I heard that's trying to add in. Just imagine when we sit at the table. I can't tell you that with Keo putting together. So once we all sit at the table from the Boot Hill to Kansas City, I can look you in your face and say, as a quote come from Tupac, we might not change the world, but I promise we'll spark the mind that will. So we're going to get a chance to spark a group of kids. It might just be, it could be two or three of them. They can change St. Louis. They just got to have the right people behind them to push them.
Okay, well, I will take that as a solid hint that good things are to come. And some of the programs that you've mentioned are currently in place, but there are others that are defunct. And one of those is Cure Violence, and you were involved in that program, and we got to see some of that experience in the film. What did you make of it? Do you think that it, you know, served its purpose? Did it change things?
Real talk in real time, nobody's going to change a process that's been like in us. It's like a leading actor, Denzel. You can't get Denzel to play a straight comedy because he's a different type of actor. So Cure Violence was a program that I love the formula. I'm like, this can work. But St. Louis, like always, you don't want to give it a chance. You have to help out too. And I feel St. Louis didn't help. Good program, good group of guys that was doing it, but one or two people didn't stop Cure Violence. You know, you had it got a bad rap once upon a time, but you fall off because the folks that's doing the work need mentor too. And people wouldn't believe. People think I got all the answers. No, I need guidance too. You know, I got a mentor that people don't understand. Like Ben, I told Ben, I say, I got a mentor. He's like, who was that? It's my mentor. You know, so when you get a guy that been there, done that, if I hear his stories, I can't do nothing but open my eyes and say, I ain't going that route. My mentor been in jail for 30 years. Mr. Payne, 30 years. And then he come right out, heard about me, and connect with me. Mm. So it's a bigger story. We have to mentor each other. And if you get, like all the guys work for Show Me Peace, we doing the work because we've been there, done it. I always said the only people that's going to fix the streets are the ones that messed it up. That's something I just believe. If we messed it up, let us clean it up.
Ben, last question for you. This film is going to be available to the general public for the first time on streaming come Friday. This is a film that brings people to St. Louis. What do you hope comes of this film and showing the audience about an aspect of what it's like to be here?
I think the goal for this film is we want people to think and have conversations, but we also want people to feel. We want them to see this and really feel what's going on in St. Louis. I think, you know, a lot of the time when we hear about shootings, we hear about it in small, you know, 90-second, you know, like little snippets in the news and just sort of abbreviated stories. And I think one of the things that a feature film can do with, you know, 90 minutes of time is it can really connect you to people who are on the screen and make you understand something more deeply, but also, you know, feel it in a way that might move you to act or get involved. I think if there's anything we want an audience to take away from this, it is that gun violence in our community is a problem that has so many root causes and so many ripple effects, and it feeds back into itself. And so it's not something that we are going to solve overnight. There is no quick fix. There is no magic solution. It's really rooted in a whole lot of things, you know, like, that are really social determinants of health that we saw in the pandemic. You know, I think that's sort of where the title Catching Bullets comes from. This is an epidemic of violence, and, you know, it's fed by income inequality, by gaps in healthcare, by education gaps, by employment opportunity gaps. And so those are the things that a lot of people are working really hard in this community to solve. A lot of the partners that we have, Life Outside of Violence is one, Breaking Generational Poverty is Precious Jones' organization, The Brick and the T do amazing work. There are a lot of people who are really dedicated and they're really grinding it out. I hope that seeing this film will help the audience appreciate that, but also want to support those efforts.
That was Ben Sholley, director of the documentary Catching Bullets, along with Darren Seals, an anti-violence activist and founder of the Sankofa Unity Center. They spoke earlier this week, along with the film's producer, Derek Phillips, with St. Louis Public Radio's newscaster, Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.